This is a Triple J podcast.
If I say the word drover, what's the first thing that comes to mind? I imagine you're probably thinking about a man out in the bush, maybe on horseback, moving livestock over huge distances. And whatever you're thinking, I reckon it probably doesn't include a young woman dressed head to toe in a bee suit in the middle of nowhere. But that's exactly who we're about to speak to. G'day, it's Angel Parsons with you for Hack's Long Listen of the Week, my chat with the bee drover, Sophia Croker. Sophia lives a life on the move, transporting animals across rural Australia. But she's not moving cattle or sheep.
It's not a job that I'm doing. It is a full lifestyle, and I don't know anyone else that lives this lifestyle, so it's definitely very unique.
She's moving bees. Sophia's a commercial beekeeper, and despite her life looking very different to most other 23-year-olds, she absolutely loves it.
Who else gets to say they sleep in their swag under the stars every night?
But there's a big problem.
The price we get for our honey doesn't cover the cost to produce it.
In 2022, a deadly parasite arrived in Australia, the most destructive pest to honeybees in the world. It's called varroa mite, and the Australian bee industry is warning of crop failures and a potential food crisis as it wipes out bees.
I knew that the moment I found my first mite, it was going to change the way I beekeep for the rest of my life.
Some experts are saying this crisis is forcing half of Australia's beekeepers to quit.
I'd be lying if I said I haven't reflected and gone, oh my God, is this worth it?
So while many are calling it quits, Sophia is doubling down, trying to save an industry that's in trouble. This chat is a really interesting look into a world you might not have thought about very often, but one that is so important to so many people and our food supply. So here it is, my chat with the bee drover, Sophia Croker. Sophia, thank you so much for coming in.
Oh, thank you for having me.
You're called the bee drover on social media. I'm curious just to start a little bit about that name. Most people probably think of beekeeping as someone with some hives in their backyard. Why is that, drover, why is that something you think of yourself as?
Yes, I think what I do, commercial beekeeping, lots of people just look at the honey and, you know, more hobby scene. And what I actually do is couldn't be further from that, because I am moving thousands of hives around rural New South Wales and Victoria, chasing honey flows and pollinating our food. And we're camping out with our bees. So wherever my bees are, that's where my swag gets rolled up. That's where we make our camp, get the fire lit up. That's what we do. We live with our bees on the road. So the bee drover just sums up exactly what I do.
Tell us about your account and your social media and your storytelling.
Yeah, it kind of started actually out of a bit of bottled up anger, actually, after I had the best season I've ever had. I got a really high honey yield. My bees were looking amazing. And I was crunching numbers at the end of the season, and I was like, this doesn't add up. How do I still not have enough money to live, to eat food? And I was like, this is wrong. This is what all the beekeepers were going through. I was like, I'm not the only one. This is the whole industry is crippling. So I was like, you know, I'm going to start posting in hopes to try and change consumer behaviour. Originally, I did actually send, I don't think I've told anyone this, but I did send out letters to government officials and stuff like that. Wrote a letter, got some other people in the industry to have a read over it and make sure they're happy. And I got crickets back. I got one response eventually, and it answered nothing. So then I turned to social media because I was like, you know what, that's a great way to hopefully change consumer behaviour. I just love telling our story because I think it's such a cool story to tell.
You're a fourth generation beekeeper, right? What do you know about your family's history with bees?
Yeah, we've had a long time in the industry. So my great grandma started our family off in bees in the 1920s. So it's been over a century now, which is just phenomenal. She was from a little town called Bilbangara, right near Griffith. And if anyone's been to Griffith, they know that's where all the citrus orchards were set up. So she would move her hives on the front of her push bike between all the orchards there and pollinate that. Yeah.
And she started on a horse and cart, right?
Yeah. Before that, it was a horse and cart. And then she quickly found out that horses and bees don't go well. Yeah, she went to her bike, and then her dad actually welded up a frame that goes on the front of her push bike to actually hold the hives. So she was a very strong, short woman like me. And yeah, that's what started us off in the industry.
Do you have memories of the first time that you like interacted with bees, or what are your earliest memories of bees?
Yes, I do. So naturally, my dad's a commercial beekeeper, so I grew up around bees. I'm one of four children, and I was the only one that showed any interest of, you know, this lifestyle. So he fed into it. He got me just a few backyard hives, and to tell you the truth, I hated it to start with. As a kid, my hives were very angry. They needed to be requeened. I just was struggling to see why my dad loved doing this so much, because I hated it. I was just getting stung.
Were you scared of them?
Oh, yeah, to be honest, I was a little bit scared of them, because, yeah, you just, when you're learning to get used to getting stung, it's like, it's not that fun. But, yeah, I was running a little lucrative honey business, actually, when I was at school. So I invested in a 3-frame manual extractor. And I'd, you know, go and pull the honey out of my 3 hives, and then I would extract them in my kitchen. Like, all the locals would come, and I'd leave my honey on the doorstep, go to school, and I'd come back, and they'd slip the money under the door. And then that was my loot.
And I read somewhere that your dad had certain views about protective clothing, right?
Yes. He believes that, yeah, you don't need a bee suit, you don't need gloves.
Wow.
That's proper beekeeping. Me, on the other hand, I do like to put on protection, especially when I'm working with so many hives in a day. Like, we could be working with 300 or more hives a day.
Did you kind of hate bees when you were younger?
Really, yes. It was a hate relationship that's turned into a hate love as I grew up. But yeah, that's how I started, was no suit or anything. But you got to start somewhere, and I think that was a bold place to start.
Fast forward to when you're 18. It's a pretty incredible story about how you came to be a commercial beekeeper.
Yeah, just left school, fresh out of school. I was at uni studying agriculture business management. I actually had no desire to become a beekeeper at that point. Anyway, so I wake up one day, I'm a poor uni student studying, and then my dad gets a call in the morning from a beekeeper who's selling a truckload of bees, which is 120 hives, because he's wanting to leave the industry. And he's asking Dad, well, do you know anyone that would be interested in buying them? So he basically ended that phone call, turned to me and said, all right, Sophia, it's your lucky day. You're becoming a commercial beekeeper today. So all of a sudden, I was starting a company. I was at the bank taking out my first ever bank loan. Getting at the loan was probably the hardest part. But we did manage to get over the line, but it wasn't small money for an 18-year-old. So that was $40,000 was my loan to buy 120. And then, yeah, I went to sleep that day even poorer than I was before with my first bank loan and, yeah, responsible for 120 beehives.
That was 5 years ago now, right? What does your business look like now?
I've doubled the amount of hives, so I'm at 240. And now I also help manage my dad's hives as well. So all together, we're looking at between 1,700 to 2,000 hives at a time.
It's a bit of a different picture than most people would think of what a beekeeper is. It's such a huge scale. And as we said, you're moving around, you call yourself the bee drover. Can you explain, for those who know nothing about beekeeping or honey production or pollinating and, you know, farming, why are you moving around, and explain what it is that you do?
Yeah, so in Australia, most of our beekeeping businesses are what we call a migratory beekeeping operation. We have to move them to where there's going to be a honey flow to produce honey. So a honey flow is kind of like a buffet opening up, and it could be anywhere in Australia, this buffet, but we've got to find it. So we've got territory all around New South Wales. All our territory has different types of native species, as well as, you know, ground flora, cropping areas like canola, faba beans. So there's a lot involved, but to really chase honey in Australia, you have to move your hives around.
And yeah. How long are you camped up at one particular place?
Yeah, I never know. It just depends on how long the honey flows go for. So that honey flow could go for 3 weeks and then it's over and there's nothing else in that area. And then we're moving again. Or we've been lucky where we've been able to line up multiple honey flows at one site. So there's been multiple eucalyptus species that have flowered at different times. So then we can keep our bees there for a month or two.
Something I'm fascinated about, and I think a lot of listeners might not realise this, part of your business is obviously producing honey, but another big part is pollinating on farms. Tell us about that kind of work.
We get paid by growers to take our bees to, let's say, to almonds, and our bees pollinate almonds. So lots of these species like almonds, your stone fruits, they actually do not produce fruit unless they've been fertilized by a pollinator. They have to get a certain amount of bees in every year to pollinate their crop in order to produce almonds. It's actually Australia's largest livestock migration. Pollination has become actually quite a critical part of our industry.
Why is that?
Because honey prices, the price we get for our honey doesn't cover the cost to produce it at the moment. So we are relying on our pollination services and the income we generate from that to keep us afloat at the moment.
So you're not making money from honey production?
No, not at the moment. The price we're getting paid is actually the same price we're getting paid for our honey 10 years ago. But as you can imagine, all the other prices have skyrocketed. So fuel, we use quite a lot of fuel because we are migratory. So we're chucking thousands of bees around. So the price of fuel and labour and the price to, you know, treat for varroa mite and all of that is just gone through the roof. And unfortunately, our honey prices don't reflect that. And that's for a couple of reasons. One is our imports have never been so high, our imported honey. And the other one is adulterated and fake honey is a big issue. So honey is actually in the top three most adulterated foods in the world.
I want to know what it's like day to day. You know, you're out chasing honey flows, or maybe you're on a farm doing pollination work. What's a typical day look like? Where are you sleeping? What are you doing all day?
I'm not going to lie. Every day I wake up, I actually don't know what my day is going to look like.
Really?
It's just I'm a planner. But you actually have to learn to not be a planner. So you've got to have a strategy, but every day is different. It's fully dependent on weather and what our bees are doing, and it's a crazy lifestyle. We'll normally wake at the crack of dawn because where our bees have been our previous years, it gets over 40 degrees and we're in bee suits. We could pull over 3 tonne of honey a day if we're on a good honey flow. So that's all been physically handled. That 3 tonne of honey, or we'll treat or breed queens depending on the day, and then we'll keep going and until late arvo. And out in the bush we don't really have the same luxuries like you guys have here, so you know, then normally if we're really remote we'll camp near a dam, and that's our ensuite, I like to think. So we'll go for a swim and get the campfire going and cook our supper. So that's kind of what a day looks like.
Do you like that lifestyle?
Yeah, that's actually what made me really turn my hate relationship with bees into a love. It's the lifestyle. So it's not a job that I'm doing. It is a full lifestyle. Yeah, I don't think anything about my lifestyle is normal. And I don't know anyone else that lives this lifestyle. So it's definitely very unique. And I love it. I love it. We're so nomadic. I've seen so much of this country. And I've seen the backs of properties that not even the owners have been to. Like, we just see so much of the land that people won't see in their lifetime. So I think that is something that's really special. I mean, it's such a simple life too. Like, who else gets to say they sleep in their swag under the stars every night and they don't know where their next destination's going to be?
You said that you don't know too many other people who'd be living a similar lifestyle to you. I'm wondering if, you know, is there a shortage of migratory beekeepers at the moment, particularly young people like yourself?
Oh, for sure. I think there is a bit of a gap. There are some young beekeepers out, which is awesome, always awesome to hear. Yeah, the industry is just struggling so much. It's not really the most appetizing industry to come into at the moment. So most beekeeping operations in Australia are family businesses and generational. And lots of them are actually now being, you know, either forcefully removed from the industry or choosing to leave because it's not putting food on their table. But it's so important. Like, we definitely do need some more young people that are willing to come in and learn the trade.
So let's talk about some of those challenges. I'm keen to kind of get an insight into what the hard days can be like and what does impact you. I know we've had COVID, bushfires have had a real impact as well, and varroa mite. Can you explain what varroa does to bees and what kind of impact it is having on you?
Yeah, so varroa mite, not to sugarcoat it, is a deadly parasite. So if you don't treat, your hives do collapse. It actually looks like a little bush tick, but it's no more than 2 millimetres in diameter. So it's very small, and they attach to the bees, and then they actually feed off the bees, the fat tissue. Obviously, that leads to that bee's death and then the colony death. It's relentless. Varroa is something, it's one of the most intensive pests in the agriculture industry. They're doubling in numbers every 3 to 4 weeks. Their population is doubling. You've got to be monitoring for it about every 3 weeks. And the amount of treatment you'll do in a year is up to how your mite count goes. So, you know, whereas with sheep, you know, they get drenched, you know, they say a couple times a year. Varroa, we've got to be on it every 3 weeks and it's never going away.
Do you remember the first time you spotted varroa mite in your colonies?
Yeah, it was a horrible day. I found the first one and we were in central New South Wales. We were getting ready for our almond pollination, actually. And yeah, I did a routine alcohol wash, which is a method to see if you've got mites. One mite just dropped down in the middle. And I was like, oh no. Since then, it's been an absolute roller coaster.
Is that like a heart sinking feeling?
Yeah.
Like, had you been dreading that?
Oh, for sure, for sure. I thought I'd have a bit more time before we'd find it. It was horrible timing to find it, A. And B, I knew that the moment I found my first mite, it was going to change the way I beekeep for the rest of my life.
And so how has it changed?
Oh, it has changed completely. So everything that we'd previously do, every practice, every, you know, beekeeping technique, just throw it out the window. It's hectic and it's actually increased my workload probably 5 times.
Whoa.
Yeah, it's so intensive.
Is that because of the treatments you're having to do and monitoring?
Yeah. It's just a very resource intensive pest to deal with. So most of the treatments are so expensive, they're actually not viable for commercial operations. But obviously, this is a pest that, you know, you do have to treat for it. There's a lot of beekeepers scratching their heads thinking, oh God, what option are we going to choose? And none of them actually are a viable price, but we just have to do it. But since then, we've had a few more approved, which is great. Our operation at the moment, we just use organic options. So we're using, it's called oxalic acid. So it's actually what you find in like rhubarb leaves.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what do you do with that?
We actually vaporize it. So we're turning it from crystal form and we're actually vaporizing it in the hives, which is very intensive as well. So we have to vaporize the hives every 4 days. And when you times that by 2,000 hives, that's very intensive. I think this has been the tipping point for a lot of our businesses. I've seen so many beekeeping businesses sell up and it really comes down to varroa. You know, it's all good and well, you've bought the treatment, but now you need the labor to go and put that in every single one of your hives. At the moment, we're trying to make it, you know, work and make it viable. So we're kind of in that awkward process right now, trying to find what works, what's affordable, what's the best method. So right now, that's what we're going through.
And on top of this, what are some of the other things that are impacting? I know you mentioned before imported honey and adulterated honey. What do you want people to know about the different honey that's out there and what to kind of look for, I guess?
We've never had so much imported honey ever in Australia. So like it was not even like 10 years ago, we really didn't have much imported honey coming in. The truth is we can't compete with honey coming from overseas. So it's really pushing us out of the market. And with lots of that imported honey that's coming in, is we can't guarantee that that is actually real honey. Could be adulterated or it could be completely fake. And that's just the reality, being the third most adulterated food. That's just the reality.
Does that mean mixed with syrups and that
sort of thing? Exactly. Yeah. So adulterated, yeah. So they've mixed honey with some sort of substitute. And you can imagine tests for finding sugar in a sugarwood is very difficult. That's really destroying our industry at the moment.
You're 23, managing all of this. I know with the help of, you know, your dad and uncle that you mentioned, but that's a lot to be dealing with. I'm wondering, like, does it ever wear you down? Does it ever get to you, all the challenges the industry is facing?
For sure. Oh, I'd be lying if I said it hasn't gotten to me a few times. There's been a few times where I've just gone, oh my God, how did I get here? It's been just unbelievably high stress. But you can't look at the negatives all the time. So, you know, between my dad and I, we're still kicking a lot of goals with our bees and keeping our bees healthy and happy. With the negative and high stress, there is still positives. So that kind of evens it out a bit. But yeah, I'd be lying if I said I haven't, you know, sat, reflected and gone, oh my God, is this worth it? My dad always says that beekeeping, it gets in your blood. You know, I think that's kind of true. My family have been so passionate about it for over a century. Honestly, the idea of walking away breaks my heart a bit. So, yeah, so I do have those thoughts. But at the same time, I couldn't imagine living a different life. Like, yeah, I know what I get to do is really special. So that's what I hold on to. And, you know, we're farmers, so we're producing commodity. We're price takers, and that's the reality. And when you're at rock bottom, there's only one way to go, and it's up, I hope.
When I hear you talk about it, it's kind of like, maybe you disagree, but it sounds like you see it as a calling and like this duty. You know, I've heard you say before, someone's got to beekeep. Why is this work so important to you and why are you so passionate about the industry?
Well, yeah, I have said that before. Yeah. So on those days that I am feeling a bit down about the industry, yeah, I do remember that this is a critical industry. So one in every 3 mouthfuls of food that we consume is because of pollinators. It's critical to our food security. We do need beekeepers. That's a reality. We do need beekeepers. And so I do like to think about that because I just think, well, it's all fun and games if everyone, all the beekeepers go, nope, that's it, shut shop. But that can't happen.
So do you think the industry needs more support?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I think we definitely need some more transparency. I think we need some more things in place to safeguard our industry from fake and adulterated honey. I think that's something important that needs to happen. How we go about that, out of my hands. I'm just a beekeeper. But that would definitely be good and education around what we do. That's why I started posting because I was like, you know what? Even my closest mates, none of them actually know what I do. They know, oh, yes, Fee's out on the bees. But that's all they know. They go, she's out somewhere. I don't know what that looks like. I don't know what she does. And so I was like, you know, I think this is a story that needs to be told. And I think this is the most effective way to educate people is to show the life behind the honey and what we actually do.
How can people support the industry? If listeners right now are going, well, yeah, okay, well, what can I do to make things a little better? What is your message?
Buying honey off like your local beekeeper. Like you don't need to buy honey off me. Buy it off your local beekeeper. There's so much passion and hard work and sweat that goes into producing honey. And if there's anyone you can trust, it's probably your local beekeeper. And I'd say, yeah, buy honey direct from your local beekeeper or, you know, do your research on your supermarket honeys. But besides that, just, you know, acknowledging when you go to the grocery shop that, oh, wow, okay, this bag of almonds, we can thank the bees and the beekeepers that got their bees there to pollinate the crop.
Do you ever think about your great-grandma on a bike, carting a bees around, you know, your family who came before you? Do you ever kind of think of them as you're going along and, I don't know, hope that they'd be proud of you? And, yeah, how do you think of your family legacy, I guess?
I do actually think about that a lot. Like, I actually was in Bilbangra where my great-grandma was beekeeping a couple seasons ago. We actually had our hives there on the orchards. We were getting citrus honey. And I was thinking, isn't that wild that I'm here 100 years after my grandma was on these exact orchards with her bees, where it all started? If anything, it makes me proud, but I think that they would be proud of me. And every time I'm in the truck moving hives, I do think of my pop. I think they're definitely proud of me.
That's so lovely. Sophia Croker, the Bee Drover. It's been so nice to hear about your way of life and what it is that you do for work and the passion that you have for it. Thank you so much for coming in and joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
What an interesting insight into this world that I really didn't know that much about. Sophia is working really hard to keep her family legacy alive and her passion for bees is really infectious. If you liked that chat, subscribe to this podcast. We're bringing you long listens like this every week and you can follow us on socials too at Triple J Hack on Instagram and TikTok. I'll catch you next time.